We're talking about election integrity and issues before the State Justice Department with Attorney General Josh Call on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Almost 916,000 absentee ballots have already been cast in our state ahead of Election Day, 13 days from now. But with a heightened interest in the election come fears of fraud, come fears of voter intimidation. Are you worried about how you'll vote safely and in person during the pandemic? Are you wondering about poll watchers or partisans who are sent to monitor polling sites? Let's talk about it. 800-642-1234. Attorney General Josh Call, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
It's good to be back in the program, Kate.
Well, your office announced Monday that it's coordinating with law enforcement around the state to, quote, ensure that we have a fair election. What are you concerned might happen? What has already happened?
Well, first, I'm confident that we are going to have a safe election in which the results are reliable and reflect the will of voters in Wisconsin. But we also want to make sure that we're preparing to prevent against actions that might interfere with that. And that includes working to prevent against potential voter intimidation at the polls. And so we've been working with other agencies, and we'll continue doing that between now and Election Day. And we're also getting the message out there that voter intimidation is a crime. It's a felony, and if people engage in that activity, they could very well be prosecuted and spend time behind bars.
What is the threshold for voter intimidation? What does it look like?
There are a few different things that Wisconsin law does to protect the ability of voters to cast a ballot safely. First, if somebody engages in threats to use force, or they actually use force in a way that prevents somebody from casting a ballot, that's a crime. It's also a crime to put somebody into a state of duress through your actions to prevent them from casting a ballot. And then in addition to that, election officials, the people who are working at the polls on Election Day, are empowered to take action to prevent disruptions or interference with the voting process, including removing people who are disrupting or interfering with the process from polling locations.
In terms of exit polling, how close can people get to the polls with that?
There's a 100-foot perimeter around the entrance to polling locations. There's no electioneering that can happen within that 100-foot area. People can go closer, and in fact, we've got very open and transparent elections if they're just observing. But what's critical there is that people are, in fact, just observing, and they're not interfering with or disrupting the voting process.
What if there are very, very long lines that wrap around for blocks?
Election officials are empowered to take a variety of actions to make sure the process isn't interfered with. And so they can, if there's something going on in the line, they can go out and take action. They could potentially contact local law enforcement and ask for their help. But I also hope that, now we certainly saw some long lines yesterday with early voting. But my hope is that with the very large volume of vote by mail that we've seen and what appears to be a large volume of in-person early voting, that the lines that we'll be seeing on Election Day will actually be much shorter.
We're talking with Josh Call, Attorney General of Wisconsin. We're discussing Election Day, election integrity leading up to November 3rd. What concerns do you have about security of this year's election? Are you more worried about voter fraud or voter intimidation or maybe the hacking of the voting process, election machines? We're at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Nancy in Verona. Hi, Nancy.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead, Nancy.
Yeah, yes. Just wondering if you show up at the polls to vote and carry out our democracy here, and there's people there that are intimidating and threatening and stomping around and yelling at you and carrying their big old guns and strutting like a bunch of roosters. Why, if that's illegal, why aren't they arrested? Why isn't something being done about that? Thank you.
Attorney General.
Nancy, if anybody sees activity like you're describing in front of a polling place, there are a couple things that they should do. First, they should contact the election officials who are working at those polling places, who, as I mentioned, have a lot of authority to take actions to address that activity. But second, I encourage them also to contact local law enforcement, because if there are actions that are preventing people from voting through intimidation, that is a crime, and it's something that we take very seriously.
Can you explain the role of poll watchers or partisans who are monitoring polling sites?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, we've got a very transparent process in Wisconsin, and that includes allowing for people to go to polling locations to observe the process. And, you know, that's something that has happened in many elections in Wisconsin, and that should in no way interfere with what's going on with voting. If it does interfere with that, that's where something crosses the line from appropriate election observing to disruption of a polling place that allows the poll workers to take action to remove those folks.
Let's bring in Terry in Genoa. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
Hi, yeah. I just wanted to say I am kind of concerned about poll watchers and voter intimidation. There's just been a lot of effort being made to make people doubt our election process. I recently shared something on Facebook with, you know, what poll watchers are allowed to do and what they are not, and the information for who to contact if someone were to feel they were intimidated or that they had witnessed intimidation. So I think that would be great information to get out there, you know, spread it on Facebook, on Twitter, let people, you know, because, you know, our right to vote is very important now more than ever.
Terry, thanks. Attorney General, would you like to say anything further about monitoring and poll watchers?
Well, I think the concern that Terry raises is one that a lot of people have, and that's part of the reason it's so important that we're talking about how there are protections in place for voters to make sure that the voting process is safe and secure. And so, you know, we put out some information about the work that we're doing to make sure we're protecting the security of our elections and of voters when they go to the polling places. And again, if people do have concerns, I encourage them to contact the elections officials and law enforcement, but I'm also confident that our process will work smoothly.
Has your office investigated any complaints about voter fraud or vote tampering this fall?
So I won't speak to specific cases, but certainly if there are cases of alleged voter fraud, that is also something that people should be reporting to law enforcement. Any criminal activity relating to elections is an attack on our democratic process, and that's something that we take very seriously and encourage people to report to law enforcement.
Have there been any concerns about the security of ballot drop boxes?
I'm not aware of any concerns about the security of the drop boxes in Wisconsin. And as you know, folks who receive their absentee ballot by mail can put that in the mail. And if they do that, I encourage them to do it soon, because the earlier folks get their ballots in, the more confident they can be that it will be received on time. But a lot of municipalities have also established drop box locations. Those are secure locations. There are protections that go into setting those up, and my understanding is that they've worked out very smoothly.
We have Attorney General Josh Call on the line as we discuss election integrity, other pressing issues in the State Justice Department. What steps do you want to ensure that our election is secure? What issues do you want the Attorney General to focus on? What do you think of the state's recent settlement with one of the opioid manufacturers? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Attorney General Josh Call here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Attorney General Josh Call here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The family of Jacob Blake led a 30-mile walk from Kenosha to Milwaukee this week to send a message to prosecutors and voters. It's been 8 weeks since the 29-year-old black man was shot by a Kenosha police officer. The marchers called attention to early voting underway. They also want to know where candidates stand on pursuing justice for Jacob Blake. Here's his uncle, Justin Blake, on WUWM.
We want to know. Voting season is here. And while we're encouraging everybody to get out and vote, we want to know where everybody votes or stands on little Jake so we can make the decisions accordingly.
Are you following the Jacob Blake case? Are you involved in the Black Lives Matter movement? What do you want the attorney general to know? It's 800-642-1234. And Attorney General Call stays with us for 10 more minutes. On the issue of the Jacob Blake case, your office is responsible for investigating the shooting. What can you tell us about the status of the investigation?
Earlier this month, we provided a copy of the investigative file to the consultant who has been retained by the district attorney, D.A. Gravely. That consultant is Chief Noble Ray, former chief of the Madison Police Department, who's also been involved in police reform efforts at the national level. We indicated at the time that the investigation was very nearly complete, and now Chief Ray is in the process of conducting a review of that file and will be preparing analysis that looks at the facts of the case and compares them to best practices for police to be taking, and we'll look to see whether the practices that were taken here are consistent with law enforcement training or inconsistent with them. And at that point, after that happens, D.A. Gravely will take the file and will make a charging decision.
Is your office looking at other possible reforms for systemic racism, for police use of force in Wisconsin?
I think there are a number of things that we can be doing to address systemic racism and also to strengthen our criminal justice system by both making it fairer and improving public safety. Shortly after the murder of George Floyd, I wrote a column talking about a number of different reforms that I'd like to see. One of them is reforming our bail system so that decisions about whether to release people pre-trial are based not on their ability to pay, but on safety to the community and the risk of flight. I'd also like to see more support for community policing efforts so we can strengthen relationships between law enforcement and people in the community where they work. I'd like to see funding for a hate crime hotline in Wisconsin. I'd also like to see more training on implicit bias, cultural competency, critical incident training, and other training that can help improve law enforcement community relations and that help promote de-escalation.
How do you carry those goals through? How do you see that through?
I think there are a few things that are important to do. One is obviously to be talking about those ideas. And another one I'll mention that we've proposed is significantly expanding civil rights enforcement authority for the Wisconsin Department of Justice, which currently is extremely limited. So we're going to continue to advocate for those. We'll also be communicating about those ideas with legislators. And, you know, the governor called a special session earlier this year. Unfortunately, Republicans in the legislature have not taken up those issues yet, but there are reform efforts underway. And so we intend to engage with those efforts and hopefully make some real progress in the next legislative session.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Josh Call, the Attorney General of Wisconsin. We're looking at pressing issues involving the state Justice Department. Let's take another call now on voting. It's John joining us from Green Bay this morning. Hi, John.
Hello. I have a question if the Attorney General's office gets involved, if there's legal challenges to how the votes are being counted and whether or not these or that ballot can't be counted by the different parties, or if that just goes straight to courts, or if he handles that.
Attorney General?
Yeah, John, the answer is that it depends on the type of case, but we often get involved in cases involving challenges to aspects of our voting system, in many cases representing the Wisconsin Election Commission. So just as a few examples, there's a case that is pending before the state Supreme Court right now in which a group has asked that tens of thousands of Wisconsin voters be purged from the voter rolls. In that case, we are defending the Election Commission's decision not to purge those voters. We were also involved in cases in which certain candidates challenged decisions about whether they were included on the ballot or not, one of which would have required the reprinting of many ballots in Wisconsin. So it'll depend on exactly what kind of case arises, but our principle as we approach these cases is going to be to fight for every lawfully cast ballot in Wisconsin to be counted.
Let's bring in Michael in Mauston. Hi, Michael.
Good morning, Kate. Good morning, Mr. Attorney General.
Good morning. My
question is in regards to, again, election vote counting. First of all, if there's any correlation between your office and the governor's, is it a possibility that the governor could make an executive order, perhaps, that all votes be counted before and on the day of the election so there is no lag, which leads for, you know, like we saw in Florida in 2000, we have, you know, so that people who are pro one candidate don't show up at the election counting facility and start, you know, badgering and harassing the people who are in charge of the election. Is there any way to circumnavigate that issue?
Hey, good morning, Michael. It's a good question. Wisconsin has a law that says that absentee ballots can't be counted until Election Day. And although there have been a lot of calls to change that law, and I support changing that law, unfortunately, the legislature hasn't taken action to change that. So because that state law, the governor can't issue an executive order that contradicts that. And so counting for those absentee ballots will happen on Election Day. What I can say is I know that clerk's offices in Wisconsin know that there's going to be a big influx of absentee ballots this year, given the pandemic, and they've been preparing to count those ballots. But it's important for people to know that the process for counting votes may take longer this year than it normally does because of all those absentee ballots and that rule. And the fact that counting goes late into the night on Election Day or even into the next day or two, that's not a sign that anything is going wrong. It's actually a sign that clerks are following the law and that they're working to count every lawfully cast ballot. If anybody tries to interfere with that process, that would potentially be criminal activity. And so we're going to ensure that nobody gets in the way of election officials' ability to count ballots.
Governor Evers is asking the U.S. Supreme Court to allow absentee ballots to be counted if they're postmarked by Election Day but received later. Are you concerned that ballots won't be received by Election Day?
You know, we saw in April a number of ballots that came in following Election Day.
Mm-hmm.
What's different about this election is, you know, people have time to prepare, and so there won't be a last-minute scramble like we saw in April. But it's critical that we get the message out there that people need to send their ballots in as soon as possible. If you're voting by mail, I encourage people to get your ballots in this week if you possibly can, because as of today, if ballots aren't received by Election Day, they won't be counted. And by getting that ballot in as soon as possible, you can have greater confidence that it will be received on time.
I want to move to the opioid settlement. Last week, your office announced that our state will be part of the largest generic manufacturer of opioids in the U.S., the Mallinckrodt settlement. Do you know how much Wisconsin will get out of this settlement?
We don't know the precise amount yet. Mallinckrodt has indicated that they're going to be involved in the bankruptcy process. What we are trying to do is maximize the recovery for the state of Wisconsin in this case so that we can get resources to communities across Wisconsin as they fight the opioid epidemic. And this case involving Mallinckrodt is one part of the broader strategy to hold accountable pharmaceutical companies that engaged in false and deceptive marketing practices that contributed to the opioid epidemic. And so in addition to this case, that includes a suit that we had filed against Purdue Pharma. They are now going through the bankruptcy process as well as working to achieve a settlement. And we announced last year that we were involved in multi-state investigations. into opioid distributors. So that process continues, and we're going to continue working to get resources recovered for the state that can support efforts to prevent addiction, to educate people, to support treatment, and to support enforcement efforts around the state.
Only a few seconds left, but I want to look at the members you announced of the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Task Force. What will this task force be looking at?
The problem of missing and murdered Indigenous women is a problem around the country, including here in Wisconsin. And it's unfortunately a problem that we don't have very much data on. So we're going to be working to identify ways to improve data collection and get a better handle on how widespread the problem is and where it is. We're also going to be looking to identify root causes and potential solutions. And I'm glad that our task force has representation from all 12 tribes in Wisconsin, as well as from folks in law enforcement and other advocates for victims.
Attorney General, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Josh Call is the Attorney General of Wisconsin. We'll be looking at the Libertarian Party right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just a heads up on our programming. President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden will meet in their final scheduled presidential candidate debate tomorrow night at 8. We'll bring you live NPR coverage of that debate at Belmont University in Nashville. That's live NPR coverage tomorrow evening at 8 on Wisconsin Public Radio and at WPR.org. Right now, we're talking about third-party presidential candidates and the platform of the Libertarian Party. It's one of five parties on the ballot in Wisconsin, and we've extended invitations to all of them. What are your thoughts on third-party candidates? Do you vote for them? What do you want to know about the Libertarian Party? It's 800-642-1234. Spike Cohn is running for vice president as a Libertarian. His running mate, Joe Jorgensen, is running for president. Spike, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me on, Kate. Have a great good morning.
Good morning. So what brings you to this? Why are you running for vice president?
Well, Kate, Joe and I have seen what Republicans and Democrats have done with their exclusive control of government. They've used it to rob the American people of our power, of our freedom, and of our wealth. And it has led to the harmful and abusive and inequitable outcomes that we could expect from such an arrangement. We and the Libertarian Party believe that the American people do best when we are most free, when we are not being robbed, when we are not being subjugated, when we are not being put in cages for victimless crimes, when we are not having regulations drive up the cost of living and making it increasingly difficult for us to be able to live our lives. And that's what we're running on, taking that power and that freedom and that wealth back and giving it back to the people where it always belongs.
All right. So getting back to who the Libertarian Party is, the most prominent of third parties here in the U.S., but can you give us a little bit more of the stance of this party and its core values?
Sure, absolutely. Again, our core values are that we do best when we are most free. We have an arrangement in this country that is increasingly one based on central planning. It is based on very powerful people telling the rest of us how we should live and robbing us to pay for the cost of that subjugation. And to no one's surprise, that system is run by very large multi-billionaire cronies who buy and pay for their favorite politicians to be in office, so that they use that power to make sure that they stay enriched and that any potential competition is you know, snuffed out. And that if, you know, any, we are basically required to be beholden to them and reliant on them. We didn't need a pandemic and lockdowns and all the other terrible things that have happened this year to tell us that this situation is abusive to the people and that it's not working, and that we will do far better when these systems of power are dismantled and the power is put back in the hands of the people.
You mentioned the pandemic, and there have been over 8 million cases in our country, over 200,000 deaths. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin is just a major hotspot in the country. So what specific policies would Joe Jorgensen put in place to help mitigate this, help address the spread?
Well, we have to look at why this happened in the first place, why the U.S., why the pandemic is going so poorly here compared to pretty much every other developed country on Earth. For the first 2 months that the virus was here, the CDC and the FDA did not allow medical professionals to test COVID patients. We had American companies that were making approved COVID-19 test kits and having to sell all of them overseas because it was illegal for them to sell them here, and it was illegal for healthcare workers to be able to test patients. Now, what is it we hear every single day? That the most important way to slow the spread and to try to stop and contain this virus is to test as often as possible. And yet for 8 weeks, they didn't allow that to happen. That is precious time that was lost. Joe and I speak with healthcare workers, ER nurses, doctors, administrators every single day, and we hear the same thing over and over again. Our jobs are being made more difficult by government red tape and bureaucracy that doesn't allow us to do our jobs. Now, in the best of times, that leads to healthcare costs spiraling out of control and an increasing lack of affordable access to care. And in times like these, it means hundreds of thousands of lives lost. What Joe would do is completely dismantle that red tape, which not only contributes to 3/4 on every dollar that's being spent on healthcare, which, you know, getting rid of that red tape would lead to a massive reduction in cost, but it would also save lives. It would allow healthcare workers to actually be able to do their job without being so burdened by ridiculous red tapes and bureaucracy.
So looking at ways to prevent the spread, masks are the overriding way. George Jorgensen said, quote, I think they should be mandated by whichever businesses would like to mandate them rather than have a government one-size-fits-all requirement let people make decisions. Can you explain the party's stance on mask mandates?
Well, here's the problem with a mandate, especially something like a mask mandate. You have the government that is telling everyone you have to wear a mask for your safety. And if you don't wear a mask for your safety, then we'll put you in a jail where you are almost assured to catch COVID-19 for your safety.
I don't know if you can get put in jail for not wearing a mask.
There have been situations where people have been threatened with jail time for not following mask and social distancing mandates. And we know from the data has showed us that the jail cells and correctional facilities are the places where people are the most likely to get COVID-19. Now, here's what it comes down to. We should be empowering people with information so that they can make the best choices for themselves. No less than the World Health Organization has come out saying that these, this idea of month-long lockdowns have been a complete and total failure. They've done nothing but cause increases in poverty, increases in depression, increases in rates of suicide, increases in rates of child malnutrition, things that all have higher rates of death than the actual virus itself. This virus is very serious. It is anywhere from, depending on who you ask, 20 to 50 times more deadly than the flu. This is a very serious thing, and we need to be taking it seriously. But we have seen that government will fail us. Government does not protect you. Government just makes your life more difficult. We should be empowering people to be making their own smart choices rather than trying to threaten people with more fines and jail time at a time when things are so difficult for them already.
We're talking with Spike Cohn, running for vice president on the Libertarian ticket. We're exploring third-party candidates, and we've extended invitations to them ahead of Election Day. What do you want to ask Spike Cohn about the platform of the Libertarian Party? Where do you see this party headed now and in the future? We're at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Katie, who is joining us from Northwest Wisconsin, northwest part of the state. Hi, Katie.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just going to say my husband is a libertarian, but we aren't a fan of either party. But my bigger question is we would love to see Joe or Spike in a debate with the other presidential candidates. And when they're not even in the polls, I don't understand how they're supposed to get to 15% to be allowed in the debate and how that hurdle is broken for any third party candidate.
Katie, thanks for that. Spike, how do you feel about not being part of the presidential candidate debates?
Well, Katie, you're exactly correct. It would be great if we were in the debates. And we saw in that presidential debate why Joe wasn't allowed in. If a sane adult who was able to form a coherent sentence had been allowed on that debate stage, not only would the American people be voting libertarian, but they'd probably never vote Republican ever again. She's exactly correct. Katie is exactly correct. They have done everything they can. Our debates are run by a system called the Commission on Presidential Debates, which is a cartel that is run by the Republicans and Democrats exclusively. They put in whatever restrictions they can to make sure that they are the only people on that debate stage so that they can continue with the false shell game narrative of telling the American people that they have only two choices to choose from. And it is why the American people are increasingly frustrated by their options. After the last debate, after the first debate, the presidential debate, CNN did a poll asking voters who they were more likely to vote for after watching that. 57% said neither. It is very clear that the American people are sick and tired of these options. And we think that the Commission on Presidential Debates should be disbanded. We think that an organization like the League of Women Voters should be put back in charge of the debate. And we should have more of a free and open market of debates to be able to have different options. Why are the American people, a nation of nearly 350 million people, being told that they have two options, which they almost universally find to be terrible, and that they just simply have to choose from those two?
Spike, I want to turn back to COVID that is surging in so many places, including our state. How would Joe Jorgensen get our country back on track economically? How do you stop the spread of this virus without causing our small businesses to go under, to go dark?
Absolutely. And as I said before, the World Health Organization recently came out saying that the lockdowns were proposed to be a 2 or 3 week long measure to give governments and healthcare sectors time to rebalance their resources and be able to deal with this virus moving forward. The idea of continuing to lock down this economy and lock down the people is an utter failure. It has not slowed the spread. It has made people increasingly resistant to even voluntarily taking measures to slow the spread because they're just sick of this whole thing. It has caused massive increases in poverty, child malnutrition. It has caused, I have had people come to my rallies and to Joe's rallies who have said that they are unable to get cancer screenings right now because their state mandates that their hospitals will only be used for COVID-19 patients.
That's because there's such a surge. There aren't hospital beds for other patients.
That's actually not true in many cases, and this is a perfect example of what happens with a state.
85% of hospital beds in Wisconsin are filled with COVID patients, and that's our Department of Health Services saying that.
Cancer has a higher rate of fatality than COVID-19, and there are parts of Wisconsin where it's not 85%, and yet the state is telling the entire state and all of the hospitals how to do treatment. This is a perfect example of how top-down planning kills people.
Spike
Allow
Cohen,
those hospitals to make those decisions for themselves.
Spike Cohen is on the ticket for the Libertarian Party in a bid for the presidency. We're talking with a third-party candidate 13 days before Election Day. Do you think third-party and independent candidates should get more time and attention in our dominant two-party system? What issues are most important to you as you consider who you'll vote for? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Spike Cohen here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with the Libertarian Party. Spike Cohen is running for vice president on the ticket. We're exploring his platform and the role of third-party candidates ahead of Election Day. There are 5 parties on the ballot in Wisconsin, and we've extended invitations to all of them. Let's take another call now. Leo is joining us from Janesville. Hi, Leo.
Hi. So I just had a question for the vice presidential candidate. What are like the libertarians or his view on like climate change, and how would they deal with it?
Go ahead, Spike.
That's an excellent question. Yeah, that's an excellent question, Leo. We see climate change, we see pollution as, simply put, just another form of an act of property damage that should be actionable in liability for the people that are causing it. Unfortunately, the federal government doesn't allow that. What the federal government does is create regulations which drive those large polluting companies, smaller competitors, out of business, leaving just the most polluting large companies left to do business. Then when those companies do damage to our environment, they indemnify them, protect them against lawsuits, with their justification being that if they had to actually pay for the damages they were causing, that they'd go out of business. And then finally, they externalize the cost of that cleanup. They make you, the taxpayer, pay for the cleanup of that sludge, to pay for the cleanup of those, you know, those leaks and those spills and environmental and health damage that it comes from as a result of it. They make you pay for the increasing carbon footprint that is coming as a result of it. And we're seeing that cronies, large polluting cronies, use the power of government to allow them to do whatever they want and externalize the cost of their cleanup on us. Now, we propose completely changing that. We propose, instead of this regulate and externalize model that benefits cronies and harms the rest of us, just the opposite. Empower the American people, allow them to be able to sue companies that cause proven and demonstrable damage to the environment. So that the two things will happen there. Number one, the worst actors will be put out of business, so we won't have to worry about them anymore. And then the second thing that happens is that those companies will have to self-regulate if they want to remain in business. Not because they suddenly become angelic figures, but because they don't want to lose everything. And when you empower the people to be able to go after the liability of those who are causing damage to them, in this case, environmental damage and health damage and property damage and so forth, then that solves that problem without having to regulate smaller businesses that weren't causing the pollution problem in the first place, causing them to cause that damage. Another big part of this is the regulations that have driven up the cost of doing business in America and hiring Americans and making things here, which is leading those large crony companies to have increasing number of things made in other countries and shipped over here, which exponentially increases the carbon footprint of the product that we're buying from them. Deregulating, putting the power back in the hands of the American people, is an incredible way of not just helping us economically, not just helping us in terms of jobs and wage growth, but also helping us environmentally.
Let's switch gears here and talk about the Black Lives Matter movement. George Floyd protests erupted and Black Americans are shot and killed by the police at a disproportionate rate to the rest of the population.
Yes.
What specific policies would Joe Jorgensen enact as president to address systemic racism and police brutality?
Absolutely. I have been to several Black Lives Matter rallies, and I've spoken with the organizers there, and I've spoken with the protesters there. And what I hear time and time again is the same thing, that they want bad actors in government to be accountable, that they want the disproportionate over-policing that is happening in their communities to end. And Joe Jorgensen's proposal is very simple. It's the Libertarian Party's proposal since we were founded in the 1970s. Number one, we end qualified immunity so that bad actors in government, when they do harm to the American people, they are held accountable for those actions, which we don't have right now. So we end qualified immunity. Number two, we end the war on drugs. The war on drugs, since its inception, has been disproportionately used to harm the most marginalized among us, including people of color and the poor. It has done nothing to actually curb addiction. It's actually done the opposite. It has led to more addiction. It has led to empowering criminal cartels by giving them, allowing them to corner the market on the sale on products, the same as during alcohol prohibition. So we end the war on drugs. We also look at some of the economic issues that are leading to these communities being so disproportionately harmed in the first place. We know that communities who do not have economic power do not have social power. You cannot one without the other. And so we have to look at things like occupational licensing laws. We have to look at things like zoning laws that disproportionately affect poorer communities who cannot afford the cost of entry to doing business. We need to get rid of bad regulations that are making it increasingly difficult for marginalized communities, poor communities, as well as communities of color, to be able to actually grow themselves economically so that they have more of an ability to have a say in their communities. We also need to decentralize policing. We need to allow communities to decide what they want their police and first response to look like, instead of having states and the national government decide it for them.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Spike Cohn, who's running for vice president on the Libertarian ticket. We're learning about his platform on a range of issues, taking your questions for a third party candidate at 800-642-1234. Aaron's joining us from Menominee Falls now. Hi, Aaron.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead, Aaron.
Yes. How do we get the word of the Libertarian Party out there as a viable candidate when our system has been rigged for the two-party system, Republicans and Democrats?
That's an excellent question, and that's exactly correct. It has been rigged. We have to keep in mind that most major TV media is owned by six multinational, multi-billion dollar companies who have a vested interest in keeping this crony gravy train system running for them. We're not going to get equal treatment by an organization like that. We shouldn't expect it. And the short answer is we have to continue doing what we are doing. We have to continue at the grassroots level, reaching out to everyday people where they are in their spaces and understanding their issues and bringing them into the Libertarian message. And that's where you come in. That is where the grassroots come in. Joe and I, in doing our bus tour, in touring around this country during a time when our opponents are increasingly hiding in their bunkers and basements while the people are on the streets demanding change, we're meeting them where they are. And we need others to do so as well, online, in person, whatever you're comfortable with, to be able to reach out to others and share the message with them. What we're also doing is ad placement on streaming services. We are doing radio ads. We are doing advertising in any way we possibly can. We know that we are not going to get the outcomes that we want from the Republicans. We know that Joe Biden, the architect of every bad policy to come out of D.C.
Okay.
in the last 50 years. Go ahead.
I want to make sure that we save time here for John in Chippewa Falls is next. John, go ahead.
Hello. I warned people a long time ago, 3-4 years ago, about what a danger Donald Trump was. And there were a lot of people that voted for the third party candidate. And what a disaster this has turned out to be. So I just like to know your opinion on how that has affected the election, and the danger still exists today.
Spike.
Well,
Cohn,
Donald Trump is simply the most recent and most brutal enforcer of Democrat and Republican policies. I mean, if you look at the things that Donald Trump is enforcing that everyone hates, it's the policies that Joe Biden has been one of the architects of for the last 50 years. They are the same organization. And we saw that during the debates. They didn't have any real difference between them. They just argued over which one was the bigger jerk. And
okay, so I want to ask one more policy question here, or one more pressing question here, so we can get away from some name calling. President Trump says a COVID vaccine is imminent. How hands-on would Joe Jorgensen, the Libertarian Party, be in deciding who is first in line, and would Americans be required to get vaccinated?
Well, we think that obviously the first in line are going to be the most likely to, you know, die as a result of it. The most vulnerable communities are always the first in line to get any kind of vaccine or anything like that. In terms of a mandate, we don't believe that government should be mandating what you can and can't put in your body. And especially if you're talking about a vaccine that more than likely will have only been around for a handful of months and will not have been subjected to years of safety testing. We think people should be able to make an informed consent about what they put in their body.
Spike, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kate.
Spike Cohn is running for vice president on the Libertarian ticket. Just ahead, we speak with candidates in the race for Wisconsin's 4th Congressional District. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.